got the thumbs up, by the way. So.
We got the thumbs up already.
Yeah, we're rolling.
Here we go. Southern Poverty Law Center.
These sons of bitches.
Man, they're no good. I've been complaining about them for years, and it's really comforting to know that my accusations that they are trying to basically create the racism in the world they need to justify their donations was literally what they're doing in terms of sending people to or recruiting people at extremist organizations. They say for the standpoint of subverting them, this is what all came out. You and I know something about this kind of work, obviously, because you remember that time we were both at the Klan rally and I was there as an undercover journalist. Right. And I'm like, Christian, what are you doing? And you were going really committed to the, you know, Jew will not replace us. Some words we can't say, you know, you were just going all out. But it turns out you were being paid by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
That's right. You were doing your day job. I was doing my day job of being a paid racist by the anti-racist Southern Poverty Law Center. Yeah, it is interesting that for the longest time, the criticism of Southern Poverty Law Center has been that they're not racist enough. And now these new allegations suggest they're actually much too racist.
So in their so they say this isn't like uncovered to be a false flag exactly. They're saying, yes, we were paying. So we've got to back up. Tell the whole. So they're being prosecuted right now by the Department of Justice for misrepresenting payments that were for defrauding donors and possibly financial institutions. I'll get into the details of that a little bit more because they're hazy, actually. But the point is, it's a lot of money. $3 million over about 10 years.
Well, particularly when you look at some of the individual payments. I mean, one of the members of a neo-Nazi group got something like $1 million over the course of decades. That's $100,000 a year. That's a lot of money. That's a solid salary.
Especially for someone who's probably doesn't have that many career prospects.
it's either be like, you know,
selling Confederate memorabilia out of the back of your truck doesn't exactly make a good living.
Public school teacher, you know, those are your options.
And also these were not, maybe in some cases they were insignificant people, but they are described in the indictment as fairly, one is an imperial wizard of the KKK, which sounds important.
One of the various KKK offshoots or whatever. But I mean, this I think is actually one of the more damning things in the indictment is the SPLC was paying a leader of this organization, not as much money as some of these other guys, but then they're also touting the rise of this organization as an extremist threat. And so,
that's exactly where the my strong condemnation comes in. Because it's exactly as you said, that their main role is to tabulate, to try to quantify how much hateful right-wing extremism there is in America. And they try to use very precise, like today, this year, hate crime groups went up 15%. Like they're attaching numbers to things.
Yeah.
You can't do that and also, in a non-trivial way, having
fund splinter groups
funding that activity,
right? Yeah,
that calls into question your without ever admitting that's what you were doing. Even the FBI, and we have plenty of criticisms of FBI paid informants, the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot. If you look at it closely, the FBI was aware of it the whole time and paid people to try to carry it out, to continue scheming to put it together. It was never going anywhere. But that concludes with them not in all cases, but in their prosecuting, you say, we relied on paid informant XYZ. In this case, there's never a, aha, and we were the good guys all the time. You know what I mean?
Right, take off the Scooby-Doo mask or KKK mask, whatever it may be.
Under the hood, so to speak.
Ooh, yeah. Right. I mean, just, you know, you watch any detective crime movie where you have double agents, and this always becomes the theme, is at what point are you facilitating crime versus exposing it or gathering information in order to subvert these organizations.
This is why I've never been a fan of deception tactics in journalism. And I've criticized people on the right or ostensibly on the right, like James O'Keefe.
Because you're eliciting the information.
Under false premises.
You're creating the story as opposed to just reporting something.
Right. He dresses up in disguise. He pretends. He goes on dates with dudes.
Is that part of a?
It's all a
the journalist. Okay, it's journalism. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, he gets them to say embarrassing things about CNN or Pfizer or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but you you got that information by misrepresenting yourself. So what if that person is also misrepresenting? You
right.
know, in the same way that if you brush up against me at a cocktail party mm-hmm. and you're like, man, Trump should wipe them all out, right? Just kill them all. And I might just want to get out of this conversation as fast as possible. Yeah, I hope he kills them all and run off. Headline, yeah, Robbie right, Suave right. caught in hot mic. I was just trying to get out of this conversation, man.
Right.
So that's why I find this a little...
Right.
Suspect.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly because he uses like James O'Keefe uses like honeypots. Right. I was like, well, of course you're going to, try to like
Dudes.
Charm your date. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I find this. I mean, just the sheer. I mean, these are small groups to begin with. Right. Like there's not that many formal members of neo-Nazi groups.
Right.
And so to pay right. them large sums of money is like clearly a significant portion of resources going to these groups. Particularly given like how many restrictions there are on like Patreon and everywhere else, like you it's hard to send money to the
Aryan Nation.
I've tried; it's difficult for my own informant operation. Right. But
I mean, this is kind of the most damning part of it. Is one of them is described in the and again, we can't just take the government's verdict of the facts for they get their defense.
We can talk about whether they should actually be charged with anything here too.
But one of the more damning facts is that. One of the Unite the Rally co-organizers.
Unite the Right rally.
Unite the Right.
Charlottesville.
Somebody gets killed.
Yeah.
Most gripping display of actual extremist behavior in recent memory. And they're paying one of the co-leaders who helped provide transportation and logistics. How many leaders of this organization could there have been?
Yeah, right.
And Enrique Tarrio of the Proud Boys is a Fed. And then there, so it's like everyone in this organization is either a Fed or an undercover journalist or an undercover SPLC. Are there any actual white nationalists planning this white nationalist rally?
Yeah. And I mean, like, you can be a SPLC informant and filled with hate, right? But like, the fact that you are giving these people large sums of money allows them to continue doing this stuff, right?
To arrange transportations to the rally where someone was horribly run over by a car and killed.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem good. In terms of the legal stuff, so they're alleging basically defrauding of donors because donors gave money and they're not doing what the money was for.
And
that part I don't buy at all.
Donors would love this.
The donors would love, they'd be like, oh my God, this is so awesome.
Right.
JV, FBI, we're doing infiltrated. It sounds, it's going to sound badass to them, to the boomer, lib, wealthy, white kind of person who gives to the SPLC because it's doing something.
Right.
We own Drumpf.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think maybe the more, and I don't understand how finance crimes work, but...
No. That's why we commit so many of them.
Right. I mean, it's not
ignorance
hard.
Of the law is a defense.
Is it actually? Oh, I'm not sure about that, but I don't want to know if it's true or not.
Oh.
Every like, rule about nonprofit spending or election spending.
Right. And we're throwing some stones in some glass houses right now.
Yeah. It's all like just what everyone is doing is illegal all the time. You file your taxes. You probably committed 8 different crimes, right? But it's just a question of whether the government comes after you or not. And so in this case, the government is coming after these guys.
They made fake organization.
So I think that's probably the best like legal case against them isn't that they're defrauding donors, but that they lied to banks allegedly lied to banks by setting up, unincorporated fake organizations to then funnel these payments to their informants in the Klan. Bad behavior. We'll see if it's actually illegal. It has been funny watching my inbox is full of press statements from a fellow kind of like lefty blob activist groups defending the SPLC without getting into any of the details of what they've been engaged in whatsoever, so I find that very funny. So let me ask you this. So the reason to steel man what they're doing, right? I heard someone refer to steel manning as iron manning the other day, which I actually quite
like that.
I think that was unintentional, but kind of cool. Anyway, regardless. So the steel man case is like, you pay for plants in these groups who then, give you information on their membership numbers and planned activities and X, Y, and Z. And so then you learn something about the architecture of the white nationalist movement in America. I'm wondering if one of the criticisms you could make of this is that people just don't join groups anymore, right? If you're like a fanatical crazy person who's going to go do horrible things or hold horrible views, you don't join the fucking Aryan Brotherhood. You just watch Nick Fuentes and, you know, think about shooting up a grocery store or something like that.
That
right?
is the a broader criticism that even people on the left have. Nathan Robinson articulated a version of this criticism in a pretty great Current Affairs article, being just like, what is the point of relentlessly tracking and categorizing and watching these so-called hate groups, the vast majority of which have very few members? These are poor, kook, backwoods people who are not really empowered in any way. When they have a fight amongst themselves, they split into two groups.
Yeah.
That's shown as an increase in hate on the map because now there's two groups instead of one. Yeah. There are also like black nationalist groups on that, like the Nation of Islam people, they, like groups of that kind.
They can be hateful.
They can, right. But, you know, we're not, this is just not very dangerous to anyone, right?
Yeah, sure.
This is kind of something you mock.
Yeah.
Like, these people are not employable. These people, like, it's, this, if you're trying to get an accurate snapshot of, like, hate or extremism in America, you're really, you're looking at not a representative sample of even, of like, what dangerous extremism looks like. Really.
Yeah, I mean, this has been the movement with dangerous extremists, to use that phrasing, is they're, you know, loner shooters, right?
They don't join groups.
This is not, you know, I mean,
radicalized online, frustrated in their personal lives, mentally unwell.
And then you go do a mass shooting or commit a hate crime on your own, right? But it's not some sort of organized plot to the kids these days. They're not blowing up
if they join groups, it would be
City.
Good for them.
Yeah.
If they joined an extremist group, they'd have somebody to hang out with.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd be less crazy. They'd be less likely to do violence.
They would de-radicalize each other.
Yeah.
Probably not. But because there's one guy there in the group who's like, yes, let's keep committing.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, like, no, go.
The
go
one
on.
Who always
go
seems
back.
To have money. Yeah.
Well, in one of the guy who got $1 million, he must have been a very high-ranking informant because it says in the indictment that I think it was him. It might have been someone else. They paid someone who stole boxes from the extremist group about their activities, boxes of documents that they brought to the SPLC.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine how important these documents were, but they did it. And then they paid a different informant at the organization a smaller amount of money to take the blame for it being stolen.
Right.
Basically to protect the more high-profile asset.
Right, yeah.
This is a lot of deceptive behavior here.
Real Tony Soprano stuff, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We need you to take the fall for this. Yeah,
yes.
Totally.
Yes.
No, it's out of control. It is funny because you remember after the Unite the Right rally, Trump said, you know, there's fine people on both sides, and this has been a much-debated line about whether he was praising Nazis or saying
right, he
was
saying
was
on both sides of the monument debate.
Yeah.
Not on both. That's the pushback. He wasn't saying both people on in terms of who's march, like, in terms of the debate over whether to take down
But if he was talking about the rally, and if there was these paid informants there, I guess there were fine people on both sides.
There were fine people on both sides. Trump was right. So much for the many fine people hoax, which is a great name. That's what right-wing people call it.
Oh, really?
It's the many fine people hoax. It's just a great name.
I can't keep track of all the little Trumpisms and like quick, like,
I think
Scott
Adams coined that name.
That's great.
The many fine people hoax.
I love that. This is something the National Review guys complain about all the times. Like, when Trump, he's in the debates or whatever, he just, like, references things that, like, insane right-wing people will know off the top of their head, but no one else has any idea what he's talking about. It's like, Democrats are always Russia, Russia, Russia. Like, you know, we know what that means, but if you're just like a normal voter who didn't follow Russiagate, you're like, what? What does that do with Russia?
I actually loved when he brought that up in the Biden debate, because Biden was trying to acquit himself of the Hunter laptop story at the time and said something like, you know, however many, it was pointed to the open letter signed by intelligence officials saying this bore resemblance to Russian disinformation. Mm-hmm. And then Politico's headline was, intelligence officers say this is Russian disinformation, which was an important difference. Yeah. They didn't say it was. They said it looked like that.
Yeah.
So then Biden in the debate said, well, all these experts say it's Russian disinformation. And Trump kind of hears that and goes, wait, that's what you're, it's Russia, Russia, Russia again? And it's like, and then what he says is totally correct at that point. Like his feed, his response to that is, I can't believe they're going with that again. No, it's not a fake story. It's just completely lucid and correct. Then, you know, when asked about the Proud Boys, he's like, well, they should stand back. Stand by and stand back. Like, how about stand down?
Yeah.
Can I get a stand down? maybe a do not proceed.
That's a little too much to ask, I guess.
They're run by a former Fed, too.
That's right. That's
Enrique
right.
Enrique Tarrio was a Fed. It's all Feds all the way down.
Yeah, CJ Ciaramella, our criminal justice reporter, had a story about this. It's always the Feds. And it really is. You know, anytime you read some story about, like, FBI foils terror plot, like, get into the details. And it's always, like, some 80 IQ guy that they meet at a mosque who has no friends. And they're like, do you want to get some friends and do terrorism? It's like, oh, okay. We'll get you the explosives. We'll plan it all out for you. Here we are. You know, here we are at the event. You just got to press. No, you're arrested.
Yep. Yeah. Or would you like to see some pornographic images? Oh, sure. I'd like to see them. Well, what if they're just barely over the line legal? Oh, sure. I'll see him. Last minute. They might just be right under the line legal. Okay, I'll see him. You're arrested. Happens to the best of us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember when the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping
hoax. That one
was
especially bad.
Yeah, when that came out, I was reading the New York Times article about it. It was like, you know, that, you know, federal, you know, informants egged on the conspiracy and followed the, you know, planned operation. And then it's like, then you get to like the next paragraph and it's like, but prosecutors tell a different story. It's like, or no, sorry, but the defense tells a different story. It's like, wait a minute, that was the official story? It gets even worse.
Yeah, they just knew, they were aware the whole time. So it's silly when she thanks law enforcement for protecting her.
But they also
were aware of it
her.
The whole time. Yeah. And paid people for it to go forward. Like, yeah. There's very low chance to me it would have gotten beyond the drunk guy said, we should kidnap the governor and her pandemic orders.
Yeah.
And it would have been left at that. But right. One of those people was in a militia group, and so he knows all the feds, and he's like, oh, guess what my buddy said.
Right.
Okay, well, tell him to buy weapons. Here's how you do that, and we'll give you money.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great. False flags, man. Are the conspiracy theorists right about everything? Just most things or everything?
Well, this is why debate. This is why I don't believe in some of the deeper conspiracies about, you know, 9/11 or whatever else, is because, like, when the government does do a false flag operation,
they're very proud.
Yeah, they put out a press release about it, right? Yeah, right. So they wouldn't try to obscure the fact that
we have brought to justice terrorist nation that perpetrated mass attack. Yeah. We don't think they knew.
Yeah.
Eh.
And if they did, that would be terrible.
Yeah. I knew and you knew. But,
yeah.
You know.
I didn't tell anyone though. No. Well, no one would listen to me. I was like 6 years old. So.
You know, I think people should mind their own business.
I don't live in New York.
Oh, it's a new day.
It's a new day.
It's a new dawn. We're going to be more serious about our news analysis, right? Freedup's changing.
Yes. As a programming note, the news has come down, actually. We've been joking around a little too much. We've been having too much fun.
People
have been enjoying the show too much in the comments. And that's not what we set this up to do. This is about serious news analysis, you know, long, deeply researched answers, probing questions.
Correct.
And it's not about skits, Robbie. It's not about dumb jokes and banter. It's not about Bane impersonations.
It's not. No more of that.
No. This is buckle down. This is what you're watching now.
Let's just interview each other and ask questions.
Yeah. So actually, to start that off, I've written some questions here.
You got some questions for me. Good.
Yes.
Good.
Yep. Let's see here. Make sure I got them right.
Put
here.
That password. Is it password 1234?
Yeah,
it's
password protect. Yeah. I won't say it. I won't say it live on air. Hey, stop joking around.
Okay.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
No.
You ready? Okay.
Yeah. Hit me.
Yep. Okay. So first question for you. Have we started a fire?
The fire rises.
I'm just kidding. We're changing nothing.
We're changing nothing. No.
Not at all. Oh, no. I got a question for our producer, Natalie.
Yeah.
Here. Do you feel in charge?
Yes. So take that.
Yeah.
They can.
Corporate masters that be. They can't keep us in a box.
No.
I mean, other than this box right
other
here.
Other than this prison of our human existence.
Our own
existence.
Making,
No, we're just as silly as ever.
This prison of flesh and blood.
Which is why, speaking of silly things, did you see the way this congressional district looks?
The lobster.
The lobster.
The lobster, yeah.
Doesn't it look monstrous and threatening?
It does,
yeah. I kind of see it in, like your therapist is like, the lobster district isn't real. Lobster district can't hurt you. I see
it.
Yeah,
well, it's interesting because everyone has been saying it looks like a lobster, but to me it just looks like a penis. Is that...
That's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it looks like my father abusing me when I was... No.
No, you're thinking of the 7th District in Texas.
It looks like that deformed body of a clown I found in the woods when I was a kid that has haunted me, and it had lobsters all over
it. Foot barely hanging off to scoop out more Republicans in Western Virginia.
Really, yeah, a no, metaphor for democracy.
Truly, truly indeed.
Democracy, do we like it?
Yes. Yes, we do.
We do?
Well, okay, we like it better than everything else. We like it better than everything
else. I'm not even sure I like it better than everything else anymore.
It's definitely better than everything else.
There's a lot under the banner of everything.
Look,
Well, don't make me propose something alternate, but I just don't. I don't know.
It's not great.
I don't know, man.
The gerrymandering stuff is another example of how it's silly. Right?
But then they're like, oh, they should just be drawn in a non-partisan, perfect little way that is everyone agrees to, and just someone who has no views and is totally neutral in life will draw it. Well, that's not ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Could AI draw this?
Yeah. Yeah, so there are...
In a way that we're fair and neutral?
There are ways to do this. The problem is... you have to have a political process to impose those things, and the political process can also take away the neutral
well, and you just
setting
have to decide,
of
but you can't fix the
which
problem
is what's
that all
right
the
now.
All the Democratic voters disproportionately live in more crowded together enclaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to spread out their vote, I mean, it's totally unfair to them if you just put boxes all over the country or like little squares because they're going to be concentrated in a small number of them.
Yeah.
And it's not really fair to the Republicans if you do these like – little webs that reach into Chicago 11 times and spread out over the rest of the state.
Yeah.
So what's the fair objective way to do it? There is it relies on a judgment about how things should be.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah. Two thoughts, if I may. So the first one is, I mean, you can draw relatively, I mean, what you do is you just draw relatively compact districts, contiguous districts with equal population, and you let the votes fall where they may. And normally that produces a pretty close representation.
Get
for
out.
The popular
Get out.
Vote.
I don't
yeah,
even want to
so,
hear this.
I mean, we already had this in Virginia. Before they, so on Tuesday, the voters, a bare majority of voters voted to change the Constitution and changed Virginia's congressional map.
Wolves voting on eating the sheep's for dinner.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What it is. That's what it is.
51% of voters decided that there should be a congressional map that'll give Democrats 10 out of 11 seats in Virginia. And this is done in response to some other Republican gerrymandering in Texas and wherever else, right? And before the gerrymander, or currently, Democrats have 6 seats, Republicans have 5 seats. And Virginia is a purple state, purple-leaning state, but purple, right? So there's still a lot of Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And so the districts were relatively fair given the, you know, how people vote proportionally compared to party. So you can have fair districts. These get less fair.
I stopped listening to you.
Wow, this is buttoned up. There's button down.
Okay.
This is what we do now.
Okay.
Or buckled down.
Sober analysis.
Yeah. The other thing about gerrymandering, though, is like...
Sober-ish.
I guess I don't really... The problem is, like, the parties are basically evenly divided and they win elections half the time. So it's like, who gives a shit about any of this kind of stuff?
Right.
Yeah. Democrats are going to win the House this next election because...
It's a like closely divided... Yeah.
So it's like all these, like, things that happen on the margins. Like, it might actually flip the election results, but it's like... But the country is evenly divided, so there's no, like... great public will that's being thwarted.
It goes to show you how well the parties are doing from a political competition standpoint.
Yes.
But they've got this thing down to 50-50.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you have a party winning, like Reagan won 50-state landslide in 84,
mm-hmm.
Nixon, Johnson won similar huge victory. If you're winning that big, the other party
is
screwed
up
massively from
mm-hmm.
a game theory standpoint.
Because
they should be able to capture some of that vote by changing their policies or having slightly different
right.
candidates
yeah.
or whatever. Now we've got this sucker down to even. Just
right.
like when you play tic-tac-toe, it should always end in a draw.
Right.
One side only wins if the other person massively screws up.
Right.
Like
yeah.
in competitive game, you get even more competitive games than that, you get levels of equal skill. You should get it down to I win one, you win one. One of the board game card games I really like, Dominion, when, you know, at the elite level of play, the person who goes first usually wins. And the other person, like, I think chess is the same way, right? Isn't there a slight advantage?
When you have supercomputers play each other, it's like, well, both sides are evenly matched. And so.
And it's a draw, or there's a slight advantage for who goes first or something, or the argued advantage. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how it should be.
Yeah.
They're doing horribly in terms of running the country, having sane policies, growing the economy. Terrible at that, but really impressive at the game of political competition.
Truly, yeah. You don't have huge swings anymore.
Nope.
Not really.
Got that needle right in the fucking middle. It's amazing.
Well, it's crazy. Yeah, it's like we talk about like these huge, like, you know, secular shifts in mood and public opinion from, you know, Donald Trump trounces Kamala Harris or whatever.
Right.
He won about 50% of the vote. She won about 50% of the vote, right? Yeah. Like,
Same was true for the election before that, and the election before that.
Yeah,
they figured it out.
I mean, when's the last time we've had? I guess like, I don't know when the last time there's been like an actual like popular
Obama
vote
versus
like
McCain was a bit of a it was a blowout by recent standards.
But I think that was even like 54%. I don't even know if he got
in front of us. You gotta make me look it up.
Yeah, this is buckle
yeah,
down. No more freed up.
Obama election. I like to go to the Rap Wikipedia battle. Page. I guess I could just ask Google and I'll get the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obama gets 52% of the vote, 45% for McCain.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was the next one was closer, I think. Yeah. Just a little bit. Yeah. 51-47.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I don't even think when it was Clinton versus Trump, I mean, neither of them got over 50% of the vote.
No,
right?
I think Clinton did.
No, I don't think she did. Because Gary did so well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was 46-48.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Biden just eked out over 50? Yeah, 51-46. I guess that one wasn't as, yeah. But that one was very close in the Electoral College.
Yeah, well, I think maybe the Electoral College misleads people where it's like you can... You win it. But even there.
Well, you have a cascading effect.
Yeah,
like Trump versus Kamala, he won every single swing state.
Right.
So electorally, it looks pretty decisive.
Yeah.
But he won each of those swing states by
50%.
Small margin.
Yeah. You know,
very small margin.
Yeah,
so.
Sure.
I mean, I'm going to try to eat into the size of his victory. It was an impressive victory. He won the popular vote for the first time. He beat her. But they're doing pretty well for themselves.
Yeah. No longer do we have, LBJ getting 65% of the vote.
Right.
Fraud and, you know, manipulation.
Don't blame me. I'm from Minnesota or whatever, you know, in the elections where it's 49-1 or I'm from Massachusetts or.
Right.
Isn't that what I think maybe Reagan went run. Blah, blah, blah. Reagan won every state but Massachusetts, maybe something like that.
I thought that was Nixon against McGovern.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
That's all over with.
Yeah. It's all over. They're pretty evenly split. Yeah.
But democracy is such a great system producing us.
You want the option to vote out these clowns.
Do I?
Yeah, I think you do.
I was talking to a guy on Rising today. We had two guests.
Yeah.
Very interesting guests. One of them, his name is Mr. Beat.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Mr. Beast, who he wants to uncap the House. The House members capped at 435.
Oh, yeah, expand the House, sure.
He wants to have like 6,000 House members.
Yeah, that was the original
idea. I don't think that would be better. I don't know that it would be worse, but...
The argument in favor of it is that you would get more like... It would actually be more of like a people's House, right? Mm-hmm. Like more normal people would be able to run for congressional districts, right? And it would be harder for, you know, party leaders and interest groups to organize, you know, kind of control the caucuses and whatever else. I guess the downside would be if like, and also like there would be no real media stardom that would come from being a congressman.
I kind of feel like we just have 6,000 reality TV stars then, but I don't know.
I mean, I think that's the good counterpoint is like, then it would just be a bunch of Twitter posters.
There's plenty of people.
Yeah.
Speaking of reality TV personalities, the other person we interviewed on Rising, his name's Mark Moran. He is a former Wall Street something or other.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing an event with him here in a couple weeks.
You are? How about that?
Yeah, we're arguing about data centers. Yeah.
Oh, yes. He's very against them.
Yeah, he was on Fuckboy Island.
Fuckboy
right?
Island.
Yeah.
And he's running for
Senate in Virginia.
And he just got some news for... trying to, so he bet on Kalshi
that
he would enter the race. He put a bet on himself.
Yeah.
He entered the race, so he won the bet.
Yeah.
And Kalshi figured that out and now has banned and fined him and wants him to make a statement of wrongdoing. But it's a private organization. They can't, they can ban him.
Yeah.
But I was saying, but so he's using that to argue that there needs to be more regulation of the betting platforms. But I'm kind of like, and I said this to him today, we had a friendly discussion. There's only so much time. I couldn't fully debate the things he was saying, but some of the things he was saying I agreed with, but I didn't agree that this called for regulation. I'm like, you did something that violated the platform's rules and the platform banned you.
Yeah.
And everyone who participates in betting on these platforms should know that some people might have insider information and can game the system. And if you still want to, it's your money. If you want to lose it, go ahead.
Yeah.
I don't see the problem or the need for regulation whatsoever.
100%. I was actually at a dinner last night where this was the very topic of conversation, and I won't get too in the details there.
What'd you have?
I had filet mignon.
Good.
Yeah, I was wined and dined.
Nice. Yeah. Good for you.
Okay. So prediction markets.
I didn't get my invite, but that's all right. You know,
got lost in the data center.
I like to think this is more than just a working relationship. But
of course. Well, this was work. This was work. Okay. This is why I made sure they didn't invite you, because I didn't want you to think it was only.
Oh, so they were inviting me and you told them not to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I'm like, no. Robbie and I are going to hang out some other time.
Okay. I've only made a scene at a handful of restaurants in D.C.
Yeah. I mean, okay. You know, come on. I mean, how many handfuls does it take? Okay.
Continue.
So here are my thoughts on prediction markets. So they do like some actually economically productive things, right? They provide regulatory arbitrage for people to do insider trading. Insider trading is great and provides more information. We should like insider trading. It's unfortunate that it's banned. Prediction markets
trading,
allow people to insider trade when they wouldn't otherwise. That's good. They can do weird forms of weird forms of insurance, right? So like this was an example someone told me. A guy runs an air conditioning business in Texas, right? And he'll lose money if the temperatures don't go to 140 degrees. Instead, they stay at 100 degrees, right? So how does he hedge against that? He bets against the temperature rising on a prediction market. And so he hedges the losses for his business, okay? Form of insurance, that's pretty good. Then also, prediction markets facilitate a lot of just like straight up gambling that isn't allowed by state law, sports betting in states that aren't allowed.
Like
that's good too.
State law.
Yeah. 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 That's the worst. But that's good too, because it's consumers satisfying their preferences, getting around state prohibitions. We like that. Then the last thing that people complain about is stuff like this, right? Someone with insider information, I think what Chris Hayes did this, right? They pre-taped some episode of the Colbert Show, and he knew what he'd said. And so then he goes on Kalshi and bets on whether he'll mention Russia or whatever in the first 30 seconds and wins, right? If you're participating in markets like that and with no inside information, you're an idiot, right? Like, you're a degenerate gambler. And degenerate gambling is a problem, but like, I don't feel bad for you if you lose your money.
Right.
And I can't help. Like, I don't
other people
necessarily
are doing this
begrudge
who are smarter than you,
yeah,
and in fact possess the relevant knowledge.
And I don't really begrudge people for the scam either, because it's like, who would be taking the other side of that bet? Like, what are you talking about, right? So, yeah, I just don't see the problem there, right?
Right. Especially because the platform prohibits it and takes action against it.
Right.
So, again, if you take, I always say this, if you take, this goes to James O'Keefe, this goes to what we were talking about earlier with the SPLC, if you go to elaborate levels to deceive people, guess what? You will succeed.
Yeah.
If you do something out of the ordinary, out of the bounds of whatever, you might achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Yeah.
That doesn't present itself as a societal problem or a reason for the government to intervene.
Right. Yeah. It's like, the platforms don't like this stuff, right?
Because
it makes them look bad.
Well, they probably want it to be illegal to do that. I don't know. Maybe,
sure.
I don't put words in there. I don't know what their policy is.
But if I went to you, Robbie.
And I'd be against that too. I don't think the government should make it illegal, should weigh in either way. That's a them problem to adjudicate. If you go to me, what now?
So if I come to you and I'm like, okay, let's bet on what you're going to have for lunch, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I bet you're going to have chicken, and then you go and have a salad instead, and like, all right, pay up. It's like, well, I shouldn't have made that bet because obviously you control the result.
You should bet that I was going to have a tortilla shell with
turkey meat, 100% sure.
And Swiss cheese and salami and lettuce in it, which is what I have for lunch every day. And if you bet me that I would have that,
you would lose the money order to eat the normal
lunch. I would still
lunch.
Eat it, yeah. And yeah. I would just lose the money. And be like, fuck, he got me again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's stupid.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah. I guess there is this annoying thing with the prediction markets where it's like, it does facilitate a lot of gambling, betting, right?
Right.
But they don't want to say that. They're like, oh, it's not betting. It's futures trading on what, you know, what people say on CNN because of regulatory reasons, right? And that's just like, that's always kind of irritating. It's like, it's irritating for me from a libertarian perspective where it's like, I'm on your side, so you don't have to lie to me. You know what I mean? It's like with Uber or Empower here in DC or whatever else, right? It's like you're doing a completely perfectly fine thing by offering rides to people and creating a platform where, you know, drivers can hook up with riders. It's all great. Good stuff. But don't tell me that, like, you've figured out some regulatory loophole where, like, actually the laws on the books don't apply to your business. It's like, they obviously do. I'm not following.
I mean, I understand why
games.
Those guys do that.
Yeah, that's
they don't,
that's
they
the
don't
game.
Need to jerk us around.
That's the game. Yeah, I'm tired of getting jerked off.
So tired of getting jerked off by these jerk offs. Still going along for the ride with all of these jokers. Yeah, gambling is just one vice. I think I've said this before on this podcast. Again, I can't remember what I've said on what show anymore. That's beyond my capabilities. Is one of the vices I defend, despite having zero interest in participating in it whatsoever. It brings me no excitement to gamble or to bet money. I feel no compunction to do it on sports or on cards or on slot machines or on random events. I want to like I've earned my money. And I don't want to put it at risk. I'm a very conservative financial person. I mean, like, I'm happy to spend money on things I want. I buy things I want. I go out to nice dinners. I go out for drinks. Like,
but
the trade is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But I want that thing. But I don't like put my money. I don't even want to invest my money. I want to like bury it in the back. I want to convert it to gold and bury it in the backyard and know exactly where it is at all times. I know exactly how much I have. Like, I've fought when I've worked with financial planners and. They're like, man, you are the most conservative investor we've ever encountered. Because I just don't want to. They're like, it will just grow. But then I want, then it's just facts and figures on a page, man. I want it in stacks and wads and in a vault. And I know how much there is. I don't want to put any of that at risk. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. 401k match? No, thank you. I'm going to be buying seeds and cans of tuna and shotgun shells. Yeah.
Right. So when I'm a Ron Paul, real Ron Paul libertarian.
Right.
Gold.
Right, absolutely.
And audit that. Fucking Fed. Yeah. We're going to audit it now.
That's the prediction market.
Yeah.
That's the gamblers.
Yes. Yeah.
I was sitting here thinking, you know, while you were talking, like, if I were a gambling addict, and you're like, I don't like to play cards. I don't like to play slot machines. I don't like poker. I don't love the spinning of the beautiful roulette wheel. I'm just like sweating. Like, no, me neither.
The taste of the cold metal in my mouth.
I don't feel the need to call someone right now and put a bet on whether a man or a woman is going to get off the bus next.
I mean, you do look like you're off of central casting from that the Deer Hunter movie, right? The Vietnam movie.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Little Russian roulette.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
The thrill you get. I mean, you could flip that switch.
I've never watched The Deer Hunter, so.
Yeah, gambling on people's lives is obviously good, and we should do that.
Yeah. The most dangerous game.
Of all. Yeah. Speaking of people who have very little regard for human life and just things that are good, and it's just a terrible person, Hassan Piker.
Yes, the son of a bitch.
I'm sick of talking about this guy, frankly, and I get, like, Democrats are like, why do you keep bringing him up? But you keep bringing him up. And he is not the most significant. He's not a significant person at all. Very few people have even heard of him.
Did you see that one
poll whatever.
Where they're like, do you think Hassan Piker has like good or bad influence on America? And it was like 8% good, 5% bad, 80%. Right. Who's Hassan Piker?
Who gives a shit? Yeah, yeah. Never heard of him. And I don't care at all. But and even, you know, and even some of the they want to get him on, you know, I don't need to parse every controversial thing he said about who did 9/11 or didn't do it, but
sounds like you care. Sounds like you're mad.
He did. Well, they did. The New York Times, man.
What happened?
What are they doing?
Oh, they let him write an op-ed about why how stealing is good.
No, no, no. It was a podcast interview. It's okay. Him and Gia Tolentino talking with the New York Times podcast person.
Yeah.
Gia Tolentino is also bad. She's a writer for the New Yorker. She's a great writer. Mm. But in this. So this got controversial because they say the thing, you know, he says about the Luigi Mangione shooting. He says the thing every other leftist has said, that by now I'm not even fazed by them making excuses for cold-blooded murder because I've just heard it so many times. I'm like, yeah, well, that's really awful, but whatever. That's what they've all said. But then they move on to like they're just talking about theft and shoplifting. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, I got it. I was tweeting about it. I got it here somewhere. Maybe we'll throw it on screen. The host says, would you steal from, so they start with, would you steal from the Louvre?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah, obviously that's great. Yeah, okay. You should do it. That's cool. Do more bank robberies, do more art robberies. And then they say, what about stealing from Whole Foods? And Gina Tolentino says that she would, and she has.
Oh, okay.
And she thinks it is not very significant as a moral wrong. And I'm just going to disagree with that.
Yeah.
It is wrong to steal. Doesn't mean you should be shot on sight. Doesn't mean that everyone who's ever done it is equally morally appalling and should be written off as a human being. But just as a general principle, you should not do it. If you did do it, you should feel bad about it. If you tell someone, they should react with
scorn.
Scorn?
Criticism.
You should be guilted, feel guilty for doing it, and you should try to make amends, maybe by just not doing it again. Certainly not by talking about it being good in the pages of the New York Times.
Okay, right? Look, I didn't know it was your Coke in the fridge, Robbie. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Clearly it still bothers you. I apologized already.
Yeah.
No, I feel the exact same way. I used to live in Portland, Oregon, right? And this was like the attitude of a lot of my friends, you know, these like crust punks was like, I'm just fighting for survival and capitalism stealing from Fred Meyer, right?
And these people
capitalism has made it so I can't.
Right, it's stealing from us.
Yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
Right. So
that's
I'm just gonna steal right
bullshit.
Back. It is. It's just like, how do you're right. Making me, you think I'm an idiot,
right?
Because I am going to believe that you're doing this out of some sort of like moral purpose. Like,
right. Also,
these
people are so rich. Again, if someone who is truly poor confesses that they couldn't pay their bills that week and they took a soup can off an aisle and it was wrong, but they did it.
It's a mitigating factor.
That's fine. I'll say, well, I'm sorry you were in that situation. We wouldn't. Okay, right. Different things are different. That's so different than going on the New York Times and saying, it is enough. I've done this. It's an affirmative good. I, a very wealthy person. Yeah. It's okay because capitalism is the true bad guy.
So much of a far left thought.
It's just excuses for antisocial behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This always comes up when it's because like sometimes socialists are good on like some of the nanny state stuff.
Civil liberties.
No. Well, OK, whatever. But like plastic bag bans or plastic straw bans,
right.
Something else used to cover.
Because poor people sometimes use those things.
But it's also it's beyond that. Let me finish.
Okay.
I've dissected the leftist mind.
OK,
so I know this. No, it's that. Well, you can't tell me not to use a plastic straw because, like, that doesn't do anything. It's capitalism that's forcing me to use the plastic straw. Mm. So I should be allowed, even though I recognize it's bad, I should be allowed to keep doing it until you fix capitalism, right? It's a similar kind of attitude. It's like,
show me on the Pikachu doll
where
the capitalism touched you.
Yeah, this is the other thing that also really pisses me off about this, is that capitalism has created these gleaming cathedrals of abundance called grocery stores,
right,
where all your earthly, you know, like your nutritional needs can be met for historically a minimal amount of effort.
Right.
Backbreaking
farm labor for this.
Yes. And almost no one had to do any
right.
backbreaking farm labor for this, right? Up and down the chain, it is a miracle of modern economic production brought to you by capitalism. And these people stumble into the store and are like, I shouldn't have to pay for this bounty that has been put at my feet.
I should have to grow it myself?
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm not forced to grow it myself, I'm going to steal from the person who has provided it for me at a much lower cost because I'm a morally just, revolutionary against capitalism. Such fucking bullshit.
Now, I really don't like Marxism. It's and bad. Socialism. And a hot take. They're just not. And, you know, we make fun of the right, too, but.
I mean, man, yeah, try stealing a crust of bread in the Soviet Union. See how that goes, right? Yeah. I don't like the ideological excuses for scumbag behavior, right? Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah. You don't get to steal from the grocery, you know, if you're a libertarian, you don't get to steal from the grocery store because they charge sales taxes or whatever else. You know. If you don't like private property, well, that's too bad.
Right.
You know, go live on a commune.
Right.
I don't tell you. Yeah. Return some of the fucking Twitch screaming dollars that you got, right?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that.
It is crazy, if we can say on this for a moment, it's funny how, like, Hassan Piker, Maoist, praises authoritarian governments, praises, you know, murderers, and encourages theft and larceny even worse, right?
Right.
Yeah, he goes on New York Times podcast, and it's like, people yell at him, but it's not like this completely discrediting event. Tucker Carlson interviews Nick Fuentes, and my God, stop the presses.
Yeah.
What has happened to the right?
You know? Yeah. They got their own folks.
Yeah. But it's never, I mean, I don't like either of these guys, obviously, but it is just curious that it's like left-wing extremism somehow never quite reaches the same fever pitch.
We've been complaining about this all that time, right? Ilya Soman talks about the need for Victims of Communism Day because... fascism is rightly consigned to the dustbin of history. The atrocities of Nazis and fascists, well documented and well memorialized. And but you can't be a Nazi in good standing. Well, maybe that's changing. you can be a communist and be all be hunky dory. It's just kind of like, oh, well, Congress, that's an interesting different way to think about things.
Let's argue about that. Yeah,
not a genocidal worldview that has been just as discredited as fascism that has actually been tried and adopted by more governments
in the last century. We have a larger sample size.
We have
a
bigger sample size.
Right,
it has failed catastrophically every single time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Speaking of communism, one battle after another.
Oh, yeah.
You saw it.
Yeah, I watched it the other night.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
I want to see it because Brianna Joy Gray, my former co-host at Rising, hated it.
Yeah.
I think because her view was that it was very belittling of leftist activists.
It does make fun of them, and there is kind of part of the theme is that, like, are you really pursuing a just cause versus you're just kind of like getting off on your own antics,
right? Just sex with hot black girls,
that's
what the movie's about, something like that.
Yeah, the first like 35 minutes or so. Yeah. So it doesn't completely spare the leftists, but it does also glamorize their crimes, and they are also the good guys, right? Like, the entire backdrop of the movie is a fascist border state controlling America with very unclear dividing lines between like a shadowy literal Nazi org controlling the border patrol and then the actual police themselves. And so, like, the leftists are kind of made fun of, but they're still very clearly like the good guys in the movie, right? Even if some of like one or two of them do bad things, right? So, I mean, I guess the movie isn't literal propaganda for Luigi Mangione or whoever else, right? But the focus of the movie is on how the right-wing fascists are bad. I mean, I actually the setting of like lefty terrorists versus right-wing militias, I actually really liked. I like dystopian movies about,
I didn't realize it was full-on dystopia.
It's not full, like, Children of Men, right? But it is just, like,
great.
I mean, it's one of my favorites.
Oh, my God, so great.
It really is great, yeah. I mean, compared
to... Let's watch
it
right now. It's so great. Let's just, the rest of this podcast is us just watching Children of Men in stunned silence.
Listeners, you are in for a treat.
A beautiful movie.
Just fascinating, yeah. It does what dystopia movies do best, which is just, like, take, like, a pastiche of, like, the bad things in the world and ramp them all up to 11, right?
So good.
With a very compelling story all the way through it. Yes.
And a great performance from Clive Owen.
Oh,
and a great everyman performance as someone who you really care for by the end of the movie.
Someone who starts as a
just kind of
lowly schlub.
Making his way, doesn't really care about the cause.
Yeah. Now, that's a movie that does not spare any criticism for left-wing fanatics.
No, it does not.
Even under a
totalitarian government,
fascist
yes.
government, their Pritchard is just as bad.
Yes,
and
they are
just
very
as willing
evil.
To destroy humanity for their own insane political ends.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. And so, that's what I like about that movie is like you kind of like come out the other side being like, well, the radicals are bad. You should focus on, you know, your humanity.
Right. The good people are just good, decent-ish people trying to survive in this crazy world. Yeah, him and that obviously the woman who gives birth and her nurse person and that crazy Italian gypsy woman who escorts them
Russian,
all over or whatever she is. And she's and they don't even understand her, but she's trying to warn him, like, no, those are bad people, and it's great.
Right.
It's
Michael Caine is great in that movie, too.
Great.
So good. Oh, man. Okay, well, one battle after the other. Actually, I'm glad we talked about this, because, like, it really does pale in comparison, because they're trying to do slightly similar things, right? Is like, because that was, like, Children of Men came out in, 2005, so it's, like, high time of, like, War on Terror stuff, and so that obviously is, like, a huge aesthetic to the whole film. Lots of concerns about globalization and stuff like that's all in there too. Kind of prescient when it comes to concerns about birth rates, right? Which, I mean, that's the novel it's based on. One battle after another, very much more focuses on Antifa terrorists and like border agents, right? And it's not nearly as cool of a dystopian setup, but it's still like a pretty effective one. I liked it. But the problem is like the story, well, A, it doesn't come back to like, good people are good and the radicals are bad. At the end of the movie, it basically like tries to quickly rehabilitate the radicals and everything they're doing. Like, you know, the main plot is Leonardo DiCaprio trying to find his daughter. And at the end of the movie, after like his wife betrayed them and betrayed the lefty group, right? But then at the end of the movie, like she reads, spoilers, like reads some sappy letter from the mom being like, well, I hope you're brave and courageous like me. And then she goes off to become a radical too. And it's like, really? Yeah, so that's all dumb. Also, this is my cinematic complaint about the movie is I mentioned Clive Owen escorting this woman through post-apocalyptic Britain. Very compelling, right? Their relationship, his reason for being on the journey, why he goes from being just like a schlubby everyman who's given up on politics to becoming a hero again. This movie, it's supposed to be like, I guess the core of the movie is like a father-daughter relationship. He has a tense relationship with his daughter. She gets kidnapped. He has to go rescue her. But like, you don't get, it's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, so it's like long. Mm-hmm. You don't really get, the daughter isn't even like introduced as like a character, like an adult or teenage character until an hour into the movie. And then they have like two scenes together and then they're separated. And then they finally like are reunited at like the very end of the movie. And it's like, well, I'm like seeing the development of a relationship or like the movie is about like the growth of this relationship I never saw. Mm. Right. And so it's like, I guess it won all the Oscars because it was, you know, libtarded. But
I didn't see like any of the Oscar movies this year. I would like to see that one. I'll see it at some point. You know, Children of Men came out in an era where you used to just like, or maybe just era in my life or era in a lot of people's life where you just turn on the TV. Mm. And you just watch things that were on TV rather than consciously going to Netflix or going to HBO Max and choosing what to watch. Mm. But you'd go, if you had HBO, to like the 15 HBO channels and they were showing different movies all day. And you know, you'd just be flipping channels and you'd be like, oh, great, Children of Men's on. Well,
hell yeah.
I got nothing to do for the next 2 hours and 12 minutes, I guess. And you just, like, I watched so many great movies that way by just like, I'm passing through my living room, you know, when I lived with my parents at the time, younger person. Passing through the living room or the kitchen, like, oh, dad's watching. Oh, God damn it. Zodiac's on. God damn it. Children of Men's on. God damn it. No Country for Old Men. Oh, I'll be here until it's over. You know what I mean? You don't do that anymore.
I wonder if we're going to be the last generation of people who it's like, have you seen this movie? And you're like, you know, I saw like 30 minutes of it.
Right.
Because you watched it on TV and then something came up.
Right. That's over.
It's probably over.
It's really over because we just finally, and I should have done this years ago, my better half, has gone over the things I spend money on and is like, even actually more thrifty than I am and is trying to get rid of anything I don't like. I pay for cable and I haven't turned on the regular TV in years. I watch Netflix. I watch HBO Max. I watch Disney Plus. I got Hulu. I got them all. I never turn on the TV unless I really want to catch something on cable news, maybe on an election night, or it's the Masters. That's the only two occasions. And that's going to save me like $130 or more a month. So we got rid of that. So that's done. So it's over. Can't do that anymore. End of an era.
Okay. You can plow that return into the
podcast. I was like the last person, I think, on Earth.
Cut the cable.
Who still had a regular, you could turn on a normal TV and go to like, oh, CBS, oh, Fox.
You know, I was frustrated to learn my TV does not have an antenna for free network television when it was the Super Bowl. I was like, oh, I'll just flip over to the network channels. I'm like, oh, no, my TV doesn't do that. Never mind. Take it back.
Didn't get invited to any Super Bowl parties this year, huh?
I didn't.
Oh, I'm paying you back for that dinner disinvite.
Yeah. It was a word. You wouldn't want to be there. Okay, you wouldn't want to be there. Yeah. Okay. I bet. Well, no, because I put a Kalshi bet on whether you'd show up or not.
Then you disinvited me. Yeah. Speaking of parties, it's White House Correspondents' Dinner weekend coming up.
Okay.
A lot of parties there. I went to the dinner last year, but Trump wasn't there.
But he's going
to
be there this year.
He's
going
to be there this year. I'm not going this year. So it's, you know, we've never. Trump never in the same place at the same time. What does that
curious.
Mean?
You're always praising him, too. It's curious.
Oh, how interesting. But, you know, I'm going to some of the events that are being held.
Yeah, give me a. I've never really participated in the fanfare around the Correspondents' Dinner. So give me a flavor of the debauchery.
You dress up nice.
Okay.
You go to an event that's hosted by a big media organization or tech company or something. You talk to reporters. There's a couple celebrities sometimes.
Who's the best celebrity you met in the...
Last year, I met Hank from Breaking Bad.
Oh, he was there. Dean Norris.
Yep,
right?
He was there. Mm-hmm. Very good. I saw... Jason Isaacs. Mr. Malfoy and
White Lotus
and everything, tons of things.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, I met him briefly. They have just relevant celebrities at some of these parties. The whole thing should not exist and should not
take place.
It's
kind of a disgusting spectacle, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With the celebrities, it's whatever. But reporters, you know,
schmoozing,
hobnobbing with the people they're supposed to be covering. It's very the
Obama
it's a little
there,
self-congratulatory,
right? And also, but, like, this should be more of an antagonistic relationship,
I guess.
Right?
But I'm not going to turn down a
absolutely not. Yeah,
not making any.
No, get out there.
Stand here. And
people know how you feel.
Yeah. And I like to network. I like to, you know, I like to go to cocktail parties.
Like to schmooze,
I know our critics used to say that about us, reason beltway libertarians. We're cocktail swilling, cosmopolitan, you know.
Yeah, it's great. Try it.
They should try it. They used to call me a fruit sushi in the comments at Reason. Because, I don't know, Elizabeth Nolan Brown and I were at some party where that was served, and she tweeted about how I was just stuffing my fat face with fruit sushi, and then it was, look at fruit sushi!
Yeah, that's funny. So, this is back when the commenters would sometimes engage in a little playful ribbing with writers that they otherwise seem to enjoy.
I haven't read the... That's for... Now, well, comments, native comments on website are just useless.
It's the worst part of the internet.
Comments on... Now, by commenters, I would mean people responding to it on Twitter.
Or YouTube.
Or maybe
the people
Facebook.
On YouTube are normally pretty nice.
For sure.
Yeah. We love our YouTube commenters. Thank you so much.
You're the best. The fans are the best. We got the best fans.
I'm remiss for not responding to it. I got a fan email the other day. I'll respond to it if you're listening.
Good.
But yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Treat the fans the way they deserve. They're good people.
I do.
But yeah, the comments on social media are valuable. Comments on the, not just our, any website itself are somehow overrun by spam and kind of, you have to dedicate yourself to policing them, to having gatekeeping, to having some kind of verification system for it to be at all worthwhile, in my view.
Right. Okay, let me ask you this question. Do you have a, you're a man who, travels in influential circles, right? You maybe get to meet stars, people that you admire, enjoy their work.
Sure.
Is there like a, is there a strategy, a go-to you have for like, let's not fuck up this interaction and maybe make it like, get something memorable out of it other than just like, I love your band, man.
That's a great question. These are hard to do well.
Because they meet a bunch of adoring fans every time. They don't care.
Right.
And they might be nice people, but they're not going to care.
I think you can do very little. You can't do much better than basically, I'm a fan of the band.
Yeah.
I was I was beside myself with joy to finally meet. I met Damon Lindelof one year at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. There's co-creator or co-showrunner of Lost and subsequently so many great things as well. The Leftovers, The Watchmen show on HBO.
Oh, that was a really good one.
He's so good. I have admired him. You know, I'm a huge Lost fan. Mm-hmm. I admire him creatively. I find the way he does storytelling awesome. Was in line for White House Correspondents' Dinner Party like, I don't know, 8 years ago or something like that. And he's in line behind me. And I was starstruck. Wow. And so,
do you talk to him?
Talked to him, took a photo with it, but I was just gushing over it. Yeah. You know, I'm not gonna like, well, here's my ideas for how Lost should have really ended. I think he's sick of hearing those.
Like, I'm an aspiring writer, and I was wondering if you could give me advice on how to avoid plot holes.
Yeah, here's my script. Will you please read it? Yeah. But I'm not someone, I don't like to ask people for. I don't like to inconvenience people.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't really be pushy. Don't. Some people like to be. Some people are comfortable being pushy. I'm really not.
Also, it's like it matters to me, right? Like, yeah. Who gives a shit if like,
yeah,
they, you know, like I have a picture with someone that I met. Like, oh, I met them. You know.
Also, so. All the because they're right. There's a temptation to be like let's collaborate or help me in some way. I tend to think
poor form.
And they don't want that. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
And also, like, you know, you don't want to treat, I mean, a celebrity is still a person. You don't want to just be like, you know, they're not like the dolphin at the zoo or whatever. Right. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to think about how you feel when, yeah. I mean, I'm a much, 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 much more minor person of any significance. But occasionally people will come up to me in DC or even other, when I'm in airports, other places and say they love Freed Up. They're Freed Up fanatics, of course,
yeah.
But they know Rising. And I love those interactions because it thrills me to know that people are consuming the content we create. I'm not a, you know, some people keep a diary. Some people just like writing or talking or expressing themselves for the sake of their own art. I am not like that at all. If I write or speak or create something, I want people to engage with it. I want people to consume it. Mm-hmm. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. It is for people to.
You have a lust for attention and power.
I guess that's how you'd put it. Yeah. No, so I love when people say, give me comments and feedback. You know, eventually I got to catch my flight so we can only chat for too long. But yeah. But yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's how. Very good. That's life.
Okay.
That's good. All right. What else we got on the list for today? Out having fun. Why did I write down out having fun? Oh, we did go out and have some fun this weekend.
Did we?
I saw you on a Saturday night.
Went out with the whole Reason crew.
And at the point that I exited, in all full disclosure, I was still very hungover from the night before, which was one of the, it was an all-time, you went way too far.
Bender.
I've kind of taken off.
Yeah.
Like, I've subtracted years from my expected lifespan.
Damn.
And I'm not proud of any of that. But then I ran into you. I was invited and saw you people the next night. We were continuing.
A little more wholesome. Yeah.
A little more, that's the operative word. You, but I exited before any true shenanigans got up to. So I don't know what kind of shape you were in at the end of that.
The next morning was a rough one. It was a rough one.
What's the etiquette for people? Let's talk about etiquette for responsible drinking and carousing with friends and coworkers and that kind of thing.
We can't speak to this at all, right? Because we work at a very particular place, right?
We all got to pace ourselves.
You know, I was kind of more. I was Did you follow the labor secretary quitting earlier
Lori
this week?
Chavez de Remer.
Yes.
Is that how I say her name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
She seems awful.
Yeah, she's terrible on
policy.
On policy, she's terrible.
Right, Lindsay, my co-host, did some whole monologue against her for the accusations of drinking or whatever they are.
Well, this is
and
what,
I was like, I don't care about that, but yes, she should resign because like, she thinks unions should have legal full force of legal law. Which she wants to give them incredible powers. I mean, even if you're
she's a pro-union Republican, right?
And in the context of, not to sidetrack you again, but in the context of federal employment.
Yeah.
Right. And all sorts of she wants to give more powers than they have in any in the bluest of blue states.
She supported legislation that would basically require or give every government employee in the states power to unionize and collectively bargain, even in states where that the states have explicitly banned it. Right.
Right.
Very bad. Very bad. But one of the like and then also her husband was like a sex pest, allegedly, you know.
Does he like giant boobs as well. Or
no,
putting giant
no,
boobs on
but he
himself.
Was like, he was accused of being a sex pest with like her staff and was even banned from the headquarters for being a creeper. So that's all bad. But I want to defend her on one small point. Is one of the criticisms was like, oh, she's been drinking on the job. And it was like the evidence for this was she asked some staffer to go get her wine at 3 p.m. on a Friday because they were like having like a meeting. She's like, well, after it's over, we'll have a glass of wine.
Oh,
who gives a shit, right?
We've done that many times.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You got to be stocked when 5 p.m. rolls around.
That's what the assistants are. What is the assistant there to do but to assist? Right?
I know. Sometimes I get annoyed with when Congress persons are complaining about mistreatment. It's like, oh my God, they made me get coffee 6 times. Like, what do you think your job is?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's actually abusive and nobody should be yelled at it in the work. But like,
oh, really?
Come on, man up.
Wish I'd heard that when I accidentally drank your Coke.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had a shouting match. I've never had a shouting match in this office. But I can't comment on times it might have happened otherwise.
This is a place of calm. It's a safe space for you.
Because everyone's so high all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I'm just kidding.
Speaking of getting high, we're rescheduling marijuana.
Yeah, for me, it's scheduled for about 4 o'clock.
A little after, right? Yeah. Donald Trump has, he's had a banner week for drug
psychedelics, marijuana. He's been answering Joe Rogan's text messages again.
Yeah, it's about Ibogaine or whatever the fuck that is.
And that's awesome and great. Yeah, this is a good thing they did.
It's crazy too. It's just like how, like, the salience of issues shifts, right? Yeah. You remember when Barack Obama like got asked a question about whether we should legalize weed and he was like, no. And that's the cool Democratic president. The, you know, the far right one is like, I don't give a shit. Yeah.
He's been, I think, good on, well, it's not really an issue he cares about. I don't know. He's been fine on it, I think. Unclear where he stood.
So this is I think, an interesting thing. So he's been good on psychedelics.
Yeah.
He's good on medical marijuana, even though during his first term, he had fucking Jeff Sessions as his AG. So they like pulled back a lot of like,
Lordy Lord, I don't know that reefer being smoked.
A little devil's lettuce. So they they stopped doing, or they started doing a lot of like federal enforcement that they pulled back from during the Obama admin during his first term. But no, Trump is like, his policy is like pro hippie drug policy. He's good with like all the medical stuff for the typical hippie drugs, mushrooms, weed, whatever. But then if you try to, you know, bring cocaine into the country, he will drop a bomb.
He will kill you. He will kill the fishermen that just look like you.
Right.
Yeah.
I made this point in the roundup this week, our morning newsletter. But like, it is interesting how just like, I think we have always kind of hoped that like drug legalization, like it would be a slippery slope, right? You convince people about like, marijuana is okay. Okay, then we can go to the next one. Then we can go to the next one. And like you bring people around to the general moral principle that people can ingest substances and get high if they want to, right? That's not true at all, right? Like that's never going to happen, I don't think. People aren't just like won over to the cause of drug legalization generally. Instead, it's like, okay, you've made this specific case for this specific drug, and so we can allow it in these specific circumstances, which is what they're doing. They're enabling more medical research. And
we got to take the win.
We're taking the W.
They're admitting it's not right. It's being differently scheduled. So now we don't have to labor under this fiction that marijuana is as dangerous as heroin. I mean, these things are different. I think heroin should be legal? Yes. Yeah, but
absolutely.
They are different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're mainly because I don't know how you can possibly, no one can get around the argument that cigarettes and alcohol are legal. They have dramatically more verified harms associated with their use,
as we were just discussing,
right, than marijuana does.
Right.
That doesn't mean that no one has ever abused marijuana or can't cause problems for some people. It certainly does. But we don't, again, alcohol and cigarettes are right there. Mm. And we're not doing anything. We shouldn't do anything about them. I don't even want to put that on the table because I'm sure some busybody nanny type person in both the Republican and Democratic parties are like, yeah, let's do. Well, they do something about tobacco. They tax the ever living shit out of it, but
and that's why it's not illegal.
Yeah. Right, because they're taxing it. Although they just made it illegal. Did you see this UK vote? This is, talk about dystopia in the UK.
Yeah.
Born after 2008 or 2009 will not be allowed to smoke.
Yeah, New Zealand did something similar, and I think repealed it. It's not. So you're going to be in a situation where it's like a 34-year-old is trying to get like a 35-year-old to buy him cigarettes, right? Hey, mister, do you mind?
I mean, I guess I get the idea is that phase out because they are addictive, people becoming addicted to it, but that's just not going to work at all.
Without banning the people still smoking it, yeah.
Right.
I mean, over there, in their like nanny state where you have like cameras on every corner and digital IDs on people's phones, like, I'm sure the goon squad will come find you if you're smoking cigarettes and you're a little too young to be doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird and creepy, right? Like, I would respect a full-on ban, right? Do me the favor of just banning the thing that I'm doing instead of this, like, we're going to cut it off at the generation. Yeah, have like...
Too clever by half.
Yeah, it is.
It's a little too thought up by an expert.
Yeah, and I guess it's not necessarily like really a rational reaction on my part, but it just feels creepy.
Yeah.
So like, let me give you another example if I can. So it's like speed cameras exist. People debate them, but it's not necessarily creepy. It's just like some people think that they're bad. Right.
I frankly like that they're not bad. It's just
the speed camera.
It's just
right?
is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they're annoying, but I frankly don't even think they shouldn't exist, honestly.
Where I used to live in Canberra, in Australia, they had like network speed cameras. So it's like they would scan your license plate at one part. And then if you showed up in some other part of the city too fast, they would ticket you.
Know.
And so it's like these are both the same
they
thing. I find the second one way weirder and creepier.
I think they have that in some turnpikes in
do
the
they
US
actually?
Too. I think that is how they do their enforcement.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels unfair.
And then they just mail you a ticket or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, we have tickets show up. There's a couple places in DC where they, you know, they catch me where again,
speed
it's
traps,
a speed
yeah.
trap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just the speed limit suddenly falls and you're not aware and
right. Yeah. Know, I mean that's the argument against speed cameras is that you can, you know, just turn drivers into an ATM machine.
But again, what's annoying is there are some people in DC who just refuse to ever pay them and nothing is done about it.
Right. So then, like serial speeders, yeah.
Then it's like, why should I pay? I mean, I pay it cuz I'm a good I don't like when it's just laws, law enforcement only for good law-abiding people and not for serial rule breakers who have no respect. For Hassan Piker or Gia Tolentino type people.
Yeah, I hesitate to reference this concept because it was invented by, innovated by the Sam Francis, a racist writer from, who's dead now. But he came up with the term anarcho-tyranny, where it's like the state lets the criminals do whatever they want, and then they enforce the laws against the good law-abiding people like yourself.
Well, that comes up a lot with gun laws, frankly.
Yeah, sure.
Because law-abiding citizens who just want to own guns cause very little gun crime or harms associated with guns and are, you know, that's vigorously policed.
Yeah.
But then the vast majority, I believe, of violent crime is committed by people who are in the possession of an illegal firearm because they're already prohibited from having firearms because they have a prior arrest.
Yeah.
But they have an illegal firearm and that's not being dealt with. And that's causing all the problems. So the people
who
already, under the existing law, should not be allowed to have guns because are using guns to harm people.
Mm-hmm.
But people who would not do anything wrong with guns because they are responsible gun owners are prohibited from having them and then follow the law because they're not going to have illegal guns because they're law followers.
Right.
It's like you want them to have the guns and them to not have the guns.
Right.
And the state of affairs is just they abide by the law and don't have guns and they don't and it's not enforced and they have guns and they cause all the harms.
It's easier to enforce the law against these people and it allows us to feel like we have more control. Right.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Do you feel in charge?
Oh. That's never going away.
It's never going away.
Yeah. He didn't mind Bane. He didn't mind handing out guns anyway. Real libertarian.
He handed out guns. Right. But he was foe. It was to the criminals.
Right. False flag.
Who were going to help perpetrate his revolution. But his revolution was also fake.
Was he funded by the Southern Poverty Law Center?
Does the Southern Poverty Law Center fund the League of Shadows?
Maybe. Federal indictment reveals.
Yeah.
Bane, criminal mastermind, the Joker, receives $1 million from Southern Poverty Law Center.
Incredible. We got around to Bane. Good for us. All right, we'll leave it there today.
All right.
I think we'll wrap up. We'll see you next week. Thanks for watching.